Farnouf, donc un des fondateurs, était également propriétaire d'une compagnie d'aviation. Il transportait des billets de banque détournés sur le plateau de dîner des passagers. C'est-à-dire que les plateaux étaient remplis de billets de banque.
Of course, they had to pay to Pamir. And we found the note that this money, so much money has been paid to cash delivery pilots.
They were hitting the bank. They all rose from the ashes and tried to destroy this bank. These were, unfortunately, this is where the investigation should have been. Who allowed Kabul Bank to purchase Pamir Airline?
I was intending to tell the truth to the parliament, but I said, this is the best time. And then I said to them that, despite the fact that it would put me and my life in danger, but I will tell you the truth anyway. These are the suspects.
Afghanistan in 2001 was in turmoil. American troops arrived with a mission, the US said, to eradicate terrorism and build modern, democratic institutions. At this turbulent time, a young Afghan studying in Moscow saw an opportunity. Afghanistan needed a bank, and he would set it up.
Quelle est l'importance d'une banque dans un pays? Je veux dire, c'était un pays tribal, complètement sur les genoux après toutes ces années de guerre. Et c'est un des pays les plus pauvres de la planète. Et il n'y a pas de système bancaire. L'ambition des forces alliées en arrivant, c'est évidemment de contrer les talibans, de trouver Ben Laden, mais c'est aussi d'instaurer la démocratie, que les institutions vont fonctionner.
The Americans and many of our allies and partners, and indeed many Afghans, their idea was, let's create a good regulated free market system. That's the path to economic modernization. So we look at something like a Kabul bank, and that's going to be a bank that's going to be a modern bank. It will follow modern banking procedures. And going through a bank, it's going to be superior than allowing cash to be passed down the line from the top of the chain of command to the bottom. No, we'll have a bank with electronic payment systems that will help us in the battle against corruption.
Ceux qui auraient dû vérifier qui sont les fondateurs de cette banque, à l'évidence, n'ont pas fait leur travail et ils ont recruté un joueur de poker à la réputation déjà très douteuse comme principal actionnaire et président du conseil d'administration de la banque.
The poker player was Sherkan Farnoud, and he took part in international tournaments all over the world. His estimated total winnings were reported at over $600,000. Farnoud's financial dealings began in Moscow, where he was studying at a Moscow textile institute. He set up a money exchange business from his student dormitory. The business flourished, and millions of dollars soon started passing through Farnoud's hands.
به همین طریق کار شروع شد. یعنی شروع کار از وقتی که صرافی را شروع کردن از مسکو. به همین دلیل شروع به همین خاطر شروع شد. بس یعنی اصلا هدف ایجاد همین کار به همین خاطر بود که وطن‌دارای ما نمیتونستند پولای خود را حفظ بکنند یا پولی را که به خانواده های خود در داخل افغانستان روان میکردند.
He escaped from Russian Federation and Russian Federation was looking for him for illegal banking activities, for money laundering and for organizing criminal syndicate.
و بعدن بعد از او شیرخان تصمیم گرفت تا ای که امی بزنس صرافی خود را که یعنی بزرگ بسازه، رونق بده. و تنها به رونق دادن از این مفکوری از اونها ای بود که کابل بیاین، در افغانستان سرمایه گذاری بکنند و در اینجا بانک را ایجاد بکنند، تا ای که مردم هم فکرشان به خاطر داشته هایشان محفوظ باشه و راحت باشند.
But the problem was that in 2004, when he established the Kabul Bank, this information was not available yet to the Afghan authorities. The information that he is wanted by Russian Federation came many years later. But even when this information came in, nobody approached Russian Federation to tell them, listen, we have your guy here.
When Kabul Bank gained its license in 2004, it was the first to be issued in Afghanistan since the fall of the Taliban 3 years earlier. Farnood personally oversaw the millions flowing in and out of the bank's reserves. He also appointed senior managers like CEO Khalilullah Ferosi, who had no banking experience at all. In fact, he'd previously been Farnood's driver and bodyguard.
خلیل فیروزی کسی بود که مسئول بخش امنیتی شیرخان فرنود بود. به مرور زمان شیرخان فرنود چون یک آدمی بود که زودتر باور میکرد و یک کس اندوال باز بود که با کسی که شناخسا میشد با او زودتر باور میکرد و رشد میداد. از او جمله یکی از اونا هم خلیل فیروزی بود. اونا را شریک ساختن، کمکشان کرد و در وقتی که کابل بانک در اوج کامیابی بود اکثریت صلاحیت ها را برای خلیل فیروزی سپرد.
Now you look at the chairman of the Kabul Bank at that time, Shirkan Farnood, and you look later at the CEO who comes in, Mr. Khalil Ferozi. These individuals have no qualifications to be in responsible banking positions, or they have very weak qualifications. But all of that is overlooked. The oversight of the Americans and the international community, rather weak.
Kabul Bank needed credibility, so Farnood and Ferozi set about attracting high-profile shareholders, members of the Afghan elite, politicians, business people, and investors, to provide status and political cover.
وقتی که به لیست شرکای کابل بانک دیده شوه، دوجه بسیار به شکل واضح دیده میشه که اونا کی هستن، کیا بودن و نامش که شنیده شوه فهمیده میشه. اما اگر واضح تر بگیم، در شرکای کابل بانک به نام حسین فهیم بود که او برادر مشال صاحب فهیم بود. مثلا محمود کرزی بود که برادر رئیس جمهور حامد کرزی بود. به این شکل کسایی بودند که اینا خود شریکا بودند. بخش حامیان و سپورترانی که شریکای کابل بانک نبودند اما یا در حکومت بودند یا سابقه جنگ سالاری داشتند.
I was asked by the owners of the bank to join them because of my views, which I share with them in different meetings. So they asked me, and I joined. I thought the bank could be used, the bank's deposit, to really develop the Afghan infrastructure. For example, cement, rebars, and in some areas, power plants.
To that end, Kabul Bank expanded its network and opened branches across Afghanistan. It won contracts to pay the salaries of state employees and the internationally funded Afghan police and army. It used creative promotions and offered cash prizes. Soon, Kabul Bank had around 1 million clients and its deposit assets reached around $1 billion.
The Kabul Bank contract that existed through the Afghan government then with the United States, with our Department of Defense and Department of State, provided the Kabul Bank, unknown to Americans at the time, with the great opportunity to make even more profits. How might that work? Well, the United States and international partners were the bankroll primarily for the Afghan army and police. In this instance, we had perhaps $100 million a month that was going to the Central Bank of Afghanistan, which would then transfer that money, of course, without interest, would transfer that money directly to Kabul Bank, and then Kabul Bank for then just what they said would be a minor cost of services would then bankroll or would then pay the Afghan police and the Afghan soldiers.
The owners were very clever. They made extensive advertisement over TVs, radios, billboards, and it was attracting huge amount of deposits from common people. And in 2006, I believe, they introduced a lottery type account called Bakht account. And this Bakht account attracted huge amount of deposits from common public. 1/3 of the total deposit was Bakht account or fortune account, for which Kabul Bank used to pay huge prices. In late 2007, when I started my duties as a governor, Kabul Bank comprised of 57% of total banking assets in Afghanistan.
The way they were marketing Kabul Bank at the, from very beginning, the marketing stunts were very flashy, and everybody believed on the face that this is the right bank for us. So that's how I chose Kabul Bank. I started it as a bank line back in 2009. When I established my business, I had an account with Kabul Bank, a corporate account. And that's when I started to actually know about Kabul Bank.
When citizens realized what is a bank, so the citizens were massively bringing the money into the bank. The Afghan intelligence service and the NDS was the first one to ring the bell. That was in October 2009. They sent the reports to the National Bank and to the High Office of Oversight, which was the anti-corruption agency of Afghanistan.
We were sending supervisory teams to Kabul Bank and to all other banks. We supervised them twice a year. But we didn't get, we got smaller violations, report of smaller violations, because Kabul Bank, whenever we demanded any documents, they cooperated with us, they provided us, although most of those documents turned out to be fake.
Then further alarm bells began to ring. The Washington Post published a damning article in February 2010 about the inner workings of Kabul Bank, saying it was mismanaged, corrupt, and poorly regulated. It reported that some shareholders had received loans to buy luxury properties in Dubai on extremely favorable terms. Meanwhile, a communication from the former US ambassador to Afghanistan, Carl Eikenberry, and published by WikiLeaks, detailed a meeting between the Washington Post journalist Andrew Higgins and the US Treasury Department. It emerged that the Americans had been closely monitoring Kabul Bank because its failure would, quote, have a significant negative impact on the development of the country's economy, in turn severely undermining the U.S. mission's goals in Afghanistan. Higgins, quote, did not know when the article would be completed, but that he would notify the Treasury Office in advance of its publication. The American authorities were concerned that, quote, its publication could significantly shake the public's confidence in the Afghan financial sector and lead to a backlash from international coalition partners.
We start to take note in early 2009 with different reports coming in that there could be a problem in the Afghan banking sector and a particular problem in the Kabul Bank, but this will build over many months. Now, as to the Andrew Higgins story in the Washington Post, we did take note of it, and it was of great concern to those in the United States Embassy, and we reported this back to Washington, D.C. So where's this money coming from? And then, if it's associated with the Kabul Bank, you've got a real problem here, and it gets back to liquidity.
Major information that we got about Kabul Bank's investment in Dubai came through Andrew Higgins' articles and subsequently through the U.S. Embassy. Most of Kabul Bank suspects, including those close to the president and to the vice president, they each got a villa from Kabul Bank money.
I bought a first a villa, in a small villa in Palm, and that was financed by Kabul Bank. But Nut came to me, said he sold this while I was in it for a good profit. So I said, okay. That money was sold. Kabul Bank took their money, or Shaheen Exchange, and I received a profit. From there, he told me to move to another larger villa. It was very expensive. I said, I cannot afford it. He said, okay, you move right now because you don't have a school to sign later. That was, I signed a rental agreement with Farnood because it was in his name.
They smuggled that money. Of course, with the knowledge of our high offices in the land. Unfortunately, at the central bank, at that time, the capacity, supervision capacity of the central bank was very low, and we were not able to discover this.
Sherkan Farnood and a group of businessmen took over Pamir Airways in 2008. This helped facilitate the movement of vast sums of money. Cash was taken from Kabul Bank on the airline Farnood owned to the exchange house he owned in Dubai. In one cable, U.S. Ambassador Eikenberry flagged his concerns about money laundering. He asked for help from U.S. agencies and from, quote, other missions in the region to investigate the scale of these cash flows.
The amount of money which was stolen from the Kabul Bank was so big that, of course, it would look extremely suspicious if big bags of money would be smuggled, of cash would be smuggled out of Afghanistan. That's why they found a solution through Pamir Airways, which was an air carrier owned by the chair of the Kabul Bank. And they made a deal with the pilots of those airplanes, and they were stuffing the money into the food trays.
They used VIP section of Kabul Airport. They took their bags through VIP section, which at the beginning it didn't have a scanner, but even though if they had scanners, they didn't say anything. And sometimes they also got permission from Fentraka or from the central bank that they wanted to take some of their minor cash or to exchange it or some defaced cash, or some of those cash went out, but tiny amount of them were taken also with the permission.
Kabul Bank slide also features in a report by the United States Institute of Peace, saying that Farnood started to lose control of the bank in 2010, mainly because of frequent absences from Afghanistan. Farnood's trouble deepened when he fell out with Khalilullah Farozi, his former bodyguard turned bank CEO. With his empire crumbling around him, Farnood went to the U.S. Embassy in Kabul and confessed to everything.
وقتی که شرخان فرنود دید که بانک باید کنترل شوه، اشتباهاتی که وجود داره، طرز العمل هایی که تطبیق نمیشه، پروسیجرهایی که فالو نمیشه، باید برای راست آورده شوه. اما خلیل فیروزی پناه برد به کسای یا شریکایی که اکثریت لینک داشت با جنگ سالارا. و در اواخر در جریان 2010 خلیل فیروزی جواب داد برای شیرخان فرنود، حتی به بانک، به داخل شدن به بانک کابل بانک هم نمی‌ماند.
Farnoud did talk to American investigators in 2010, in the summer of 2010. I'd speculate there's two reasons for this. Farnoud, a very interesting man, and with a very humble beginning. And in 2004, he establishes the Kabul Bank. That was his baby. But by 2009, his chief executive officer, Ferozi, is trying to move Farnoud out of that position. So I think he's angry. Farnoud prided himself on being a good gambler. In fact, he participated in international world poker stakes. And it could be that what Farnoud was thinking is, I'm too big to fail. If I fail, the government of Afghanistan may fail. The Americans won't let that happen. My government of Afghanistan won't let this happen.
Farnoud's confession covered Kabul Bank's illegal activities, the luxury properties in Dubai, and how the savings of Afghan citizens were being used for off-the-books loans to some of the bank's shareholders. In response, the governor of the Central Bank of Afghanistan sacked both Sherkan Farnoud and CEO Khalilullah Ferozi.
Farnoud actually was very... assured him that his life was not in danger and we provide him security in Kabul, his bulletproof cars in Kabul and his guest house in Kabul. Then during the meeting, he told me, man, do you know how much money is missing? I'm the only one who is disclosing this money, these funds to you. You know that these people who took this money, they do not want me alive. They want to kill me.
When the governor fired the chairman and the CEO in August 2010, of course, the word came out and the panic started because people realized that something is really wrong with the bank. So they were afraid for their savings and they wanted to collect their savings. So there were long queues, security incidents and so on. And it soon became clear that the bank doesn't have the money to pay all the clients.
By the time this whole scandal thing was revealed, I was out of country. I was not in Afghanistan. And when I heard about it, I rushed to back to Kabul just to make sure that my money is safe. And it was quite devastating because we as a public, we as a business, we relied on the bank. On the face, everything looked so normal.
But everything was far from normal. Kabul Bank was in free fall, and the consequences for Afghanistan and its people were potentially catastrophic. Panic set in as thousands of Afghan citizens rushed to withdraw their savings. This run on the bank caused it to collapse. The Afghan government attempted to rescue the situation by providing $825 million from the central bank's reserves to reassure a skeptical public.
My message to all the depositors is that there's money safe. The government of the Afghanistan Bank is standing behind Kabul Bank. We know the money is there. They must not panic. If they need their money on a regular basis, they can withdraw it. But to panic and say their money will be lost, I guarantee to them that it will not be.
The collapse of the Afghan bank sent a shockwave through not only the international community and not only through the Afghan government, but to the men and women on the streets. There was a period of time in the early fall of 2010 where a big bank run began. Those 1 million Afghan deposit holders or account holders that accounted for perhaps $1.1, $1.2 billion. So it was quite sizable.
Kabul Bank was not to be treated like this because I think it was more a political scheme, or let's say a manipulation of the fact, which a group made sure that it should fail. It should be taken by the government. I don't want to take names, but it was a group. And what they did was The most ridiculous thing was that Washington Post published a paper that $900 million were lost. This was a complete blunt lie from the investigation that we have done and from what we know, because Kabul Bank had $1.2 billion as deposits. This was a complete lie. In this report caused the run on the bank.
However, the evidence seemed to suggest otherwise. An independent auditor's report in November 2012 showed the scale of the Kabul Bank fraud. It said that nearly $900 million had been loaned to just 19 people and companies.
President Karzai didn't act until I wrote him an official letter. Then he, 3 weeks after I wrote him an official letter, he told me, okay, Governor, do whatever you want. And then, based on that oral instruction, I ordered the head of the 10th security, I requested them to take Farnood and Firouzi under custody. In May 2011, with the help of IMF and with recommendation from the international community, we wrote a letter to major, about 50, 60, roughly 60 central banks around the world to freeze funds belonging to Kabul Bank's perpetrators. We managed to get the perpetrators' signatures and fingerprints on the documents, including brother of the president and including the brother of vice president. In the history of Afghanistan, it was unheard of.
This was a plan to take the bank. Or maybe they were being paid, like the president of the central bank is being paid.
There were Afghan Americans involved with the Kabul Bank. At that time, Mahmoud Karzai, a brother of President Karzai, it was known that he had got a interest-free loan from the Kabul Bank. In fact, in Kabul Bank machinations, he received a several million-dollar loan and then turned that around and invested it in the Kabul Bank. At any rate, when you have a U.S. citizen that's involved in a crime, then you have a wall that's put around that citizen who might be under investigation appropriately. It's called rule of law, and the Department of Justice then will not let anybody behind that wall that's not involved in the justice investigation. So in those instances, as U.S. ambassador, that I was disturbed, but I understood fully that I could not get access to that information.
The ambassador of the United States in Afghanistan, Mr. Eikenberry, and some of his cronies, of course. An ambassador, the American ambassador, has a lot of power in this country. He can do many things. He can put people to destroy certain part of the economy. But I could say that he was in a very good battle with my brother on many issues like the killings and all that, bombardment and all that. I'm not a politician. This reverend. And also getting... putting me in risk, maybe that he could pressure the president or something, I don't know. Also, he was asking me in Ajay Asin. Ajay Asin is the brother of Marshal Fahim. So he told some people that, tell me what they have done. I'm not interested in other people. So from that, I knew that he was kind of behind all this.
Kabul Bank nishan namide ke ma bari bahuzur tanam yali nishan mitum.
Making these allegations against Kabul Bank was none other than the governor of the Central Bank of Afghanistan. Abdul Qadir Fitrat held the post until 2011. However, later that year, he fled the country and moved to the United States. He said that his whistleblowing had put his life in danger and that he had no other option than to escape.
حسین فهیم، مامور شخصی که و محمود کرزی. I was intending to tell the truth to the parliament, but I said this is the best time. And then I said to them that despite the fact that it would put me and my life in danger, but I will tell you the truth anyway. These are the suspects. During late, probably after 23rd of May or 24th, these days, high-level diplomats that I do not want to disclose him requested a meeting with me and told me, Mr. Fitrat, we are very worried about you. The sooner you leave the country, the better it would be.
In April 2011, Kabul Bank went into receivership. It was replaced by New Kabul Bank, a state-run company using banking assets not associated with fraud. Legal proceedings began against some, but not all, of the leading shareholders of the original Kabul Bank. Al Jazeera requested an interview with the chief judge on the Kabul Bank case to ask why certain names were omitted from the charge sheet. However, he declined the interview request, as did the head of investigations at the Afghan Supreme Court.
When the independent commission produced the report in May 2011, the prosecutors wrote their indictments almost immediately, but they did not file them with the court. And this did not happen until June 2012. And this is important date because just before that, the prosecutors had an urgent meeting with the high-level committee, which told them whom to indict and whom not to indict. So basically, it was the politicians making the decision who will go to the court and who not. The prosecutors then accordingly changed the indictments and then sent them to the court.
How come nobody examined the loans of the Kabul Bank? How were the loans given to people in their papers? And where was the board of directors of the bank? Because in Afghanistan, if the management approves a loan, it goes to the board of directors for their approval. Where are these people? How come they were never questioned? How come I was never questioned? If I was a part of the bank and a famous person, president, the brother of the president, and I was a shareholder, how come the courts never asked me? How come anybody didn't ask me, or the papers or anything? So it really needs a true investigation of this political manipulation that made the bank collapse.
Le procureur général refuse de poursuivre. Il refuse de poursuivre toutes les personnes qu'il pense être protégées par un pouvoir politique quelconque, donc pouvoir politique central, mais aussi régional. Ça rencontre énormément de difficultés et Kabul Bank est l'illustration de ça.
Questions of political interference remained unanswered, but the court finally reached its verdict in March 2013. But at the last minute, charges against the former chairman Sherkan Farnoud and CEO Khalilullah Ferozi were mysteriously dropped, including accusations of embezzlement, forgery, money laundering, and other serious offences. Instead, they were convicted of the lesser charge of breach of trust. They were each sentenced to 5 years imprisonment and ordered to repay a combined total of over $800 million. Other Kabul Bank and Central Bank staff were also convicted and sentenced. They included the governor of the Central Bank and his deputy, who were convicted of obstructing justice.
It was a travesty of justice. It was a travesty of justice. Major suspects of Kabul Bank, who stole millions, tens of millions of dollars of Kabul Bank, they are free. They have never been investigated, including relatives of high political authorities, then high political authorities of Afghanistan. And only Farnood and Firouzi was sentenced during President Karzai for 5 years, which was a very light sentence.
یعنی شرخان فرنود کسی بود که هیچ حمایتگری که به اساس یک غرض مطرح باشه نداشتن و هر کسی یا شریکای دیگه هم چون اونا روابط و لینک های در داخل حکومت و در بیرون داشتن اونا خود را کشیدن و کل بار بالای شرخان فرنود انداخت. اما شرخان فرنود وقتی که متهم شد حکومت به خاطر که یک چیزی را داشته باشه برای جامعه جهانی که ما رسیدگی کردیم به این موضوع یک کسی را باید قربانی میکرد. به نظر ما شرخان فرنود در این موضوع قربانی شد.
With Farnood and Firouzi in prison, the Afghan government began the task of recovering Kabul Bank's embezzled assets. Some former Kabul Bank shareholders were forced to repay their debts. The Afghan government imposed a deadline of June 2012 for them to pay. But the payments were much lower than expected. An International Monetary Fund report published at that time said that the cash recovered was just $128 million out of a total outstanding debt of $935 million. This left a shortfall of over $800 million.
In the case of Kabul Bank, we cannot blame the countries, let's say here in Europe, for not offering enough assistance because the requests they were receiving from Afghanistan were really strange. First of all, there were requests only going after the ex-chairman, ex-CEO. Second, in majority of cases, the requests were written in Dari. So I know when the Swiss authorities received the requests in Dari, they asked, can you please translate it into French? And the Afghan answer was, no, Dari is official language in Afghanistan, we will not translate it. So now you got a letter which you cannot read, which doesn't have the technical details you need. How will you respond to it?
Il y a aussi l'absence de volonté des bénéficiaires de le restituer et le fait que pour beaucoup des dignitaires afghans, leur réputation est telle que personne n'ose vraiment aller chercher les fonds.
See, my brother was the president and we're from proper families in here. So the minute they said that bring us the loan, I was afraid of my name in our political situation. At the time, they wanted 9% interest, which my loans, when they gave it to me, was not declared. I was given as a shareholder a nice soft loan. What they said that I immediately paid.
It's important to note that after repaying the loan, Mahmoud Karzai was not charged with or convicted of any offence in relation to the Kabul Bank case. The Afghan constitution prohibited Mahmoud Karzai's brother Hamid from standing for a third presidential term, and he was succeeded in September 2014 by Ashraf Ghani. 2 days after Ghani was sworn in, he issued a presidential decree reopening the inquiry into fraud at Kabul Bank. But time was short. An international donors' conference was to take place within 3 months in London, and failure to recover Kabul Bank's debts would put off potential investors. However, on the first day of the London conference, the Afghan Supreme Court delivered its verdict and signaled a tougher stance on financial crime in Afghanistan.
با تأسف برای اینکه از یک طرف رئیس جمهور وعده داده بود که با قضیه کابل بانک به صورت جدی برخورد میکنه و حتماً را یک طرفه میکنه، از طرف دیگه هم نشست لندن پیش روی بود و در اونجا باید یک دستاوردی را رئیس جمهور ارائه میکرد، مراجع عدلی و قضایی و ما زیر فشار بودیم که باید یک دستاورد را، یک نتیجه را در کنفرانس لندن ارائه بکنیم. ما دقیق یادم است حتی جناب رئیس جمهور هنوز صحبتش در کنفرانس لندن شروع نشده بود که من مجبور شدم با اعمال فشار سر استر محکمه قضیه را خلاص کنیم و از همینجا تلفنی به رئیس جمهور من خبر دادم که قضیه محکمه کابل بانک مرحله استنافیش تکمیل شد و شما میتونید اونجا در واقع را یادآور شوین. یعنی در واقع تعهد رئیس جمهور در نسبت به همکاران بین المللی و انتظار و فشار از اونا بود که باید یک دستاورد میداشت.
At the new trial, Sherkan Farnood and Khalilullah Ferozi were convicted for a second time on the more serious charges of embezzlement and money laundering. They were each sentenced to 10 years in prison. Both men were fined and their assets were frozen. Some other shareholders were also punished.
On our second day in office, we tackled the notorious case of Kabul Bank, which for years had lain in abeyance. I'm pleased to report to you that all the court system of Afghanistan, including the Supreme Court, has now made a decision against these thieves and has allowed us to collect from them. And we will collect and get the public purse refilled.
However, less than 2 years into his 10-year sentence, former CEO Khalilullah Ferozi was freed. He appeared on Afghan TV news, laying the foundation stone for a new housing development called Smart City. Afghans were outraged. President Ghani intervened, sent Ferozi back to jail, cancelled the Smart City project, and sacked his own legal advisor, who defended his position.
متاسفانه یکی از قضایایی که درست بازتاب داده نشده موضوع شهرک هوشمند است. من پیشتر اشاره کردم که ما از طریق کمیسیون پیگیری قضای کابل بانک که در اونجا مشاور اقتصادی رئیس جمهور بود، من به عنوان مشاور حقوقی رئیس جمهور رئیس کمیته بودم، سرپرست افغانستان بانک اونجا بود، لوی سارنوال اونجا حضور داشت. در واقع اینمی کمیسیون یک طرز العملی را تصویب کردند که بر نامش بود طرز العمل تشویقی حل قضایای کابل بانک که به استناد حکم محکمه استینافی ترتیب شده بود. بعد این طرز العمل به تصویب کابینه رسید، یعنی رسما کابینه با حضور رئیس جمهور و زیر نظر رئیس جمهور این طرز العمل تصویب کرد و دستور اجرا شدنش به ما داد. اما زمانی که متاسفانه مشکل ایجاد شد، رئیس جمهور دیگه همه چیز فراموش کرد و در واقع احساس کرد که اگر محمدی استعفا کنه شاید مشکل حل شود.
Sherkan Farnood died in Bagram prison in August 2018 at the age of 57. The cause of death was reported as a heart attack. However, his family questioned this, as they said he'd been in good health while in prison.
وقت زمانی که وقتی خانمشان امروی ما تماس گرفتند، او زمان برام بسیار دردآور بود که من هیچ پاسخی نداشتم. و همچنان وقتی که در طبیعتلی امو خانوادهشان اجازه دادن که نتیجه طبیعتلی یا کاربوش کافی میگیم صورت بگیره، اجازه دادن که کار باید شد تا یکی معلوم شد که چطور یک دفعه اینا جانا به حق دادن. متاسف هستم، بسیار متاسف هستم که در اون زمان روزی که اول در طبیعتلی همراه همه ما بسیار روی خوب صورت گرفت، ولی روزی دو وقتی که ما رفتیم که نتیجه طبیعتلی رو برای ما بدن، نتیجه رو بدن، حتی سربازهای دان دروازه هم روی ما بسیار روی خراب کردند، زشت گفتند، زور گفتند، برای گفتند. بعدا توسط مطبوعات اعلان کردند که گویا چیزی از اینها همین دلیل جان به حق دادن اینها طبیعی است. دلیل خود دارم، اعضای خانوادش موافق نیستند، دلایل خود داریم. چرا به من اجازه داده نشد که من برم نتیجه را خودم بگیرم از شفاخانه، از زان دروازه من را پس گشتم.
Kabul Bank's former CEO Khalilullah Ferozi obtained an early release from prison in August 2019. He was freed on medical grounds and placed under house arrest. As to the missing money, some has been recovered, but hundreds of millions of dollars appear to have been lost. A 2019 IMF report said, quote, recoveries and settlements have reached $402 million by February 2019. But this includes only $266 million in cash and there remains $591 million of pending claims.
We were insisting that all the suspects have to be investigated because that would enable sanctioning of everybody who got something from the bank, and that would enable the government to restore the trust, which would be a huge achievement for the future generations, because at least once in the history of the country, the government could say, listen, nobody is above the law.
The real victims in the Kabul Bank collapse were the customers who lost money, rich and poor. But the financial disaster was also symptomatic of the corruption that plagued the Afghan government during the 20 years it was supported by the West. This was one of the underlying problems with the US-led campaign in Afghanistan, which ultimately contributed to the fall of the Afghan government and allowed the return to power in August 2021 of the Taliban.